Chapter 7, From Handicaps to Handles. Thomas Carlyle once made the statement that for every person who can handle prosperity, there are 100 who can handle adversity. As strange as this statement may be, the way we handle adversity says much about whether or not we ever achieve prosperity. Adversity has a way of bringing out the best in us. Prosperity has a way of tranquilizing us. Adversity has a way of pushing us to utilize all available resources. Prosperity has a way of romanticizing our own abilities and stymieing our continued development. Adversity has a way of putting life in true perspective and forcing us to face reality. Prosperity opens the door for inordinate pride and conceited fantasy. Sometimes we find ourselves in the position of Israel. In the wilderness, Israel was a nation composed of resolute, determined, committed people with a purpose in mind and a goal to achieve. Then they reached the promised land. Suddenly, all their needs were met. All the necessities of life were available to them. They had curds from the herds. They had milk from the flocks. They had fat from the lambs and the rams. They had meat from the herds of Bashan. They had wheat from the fields. They had wine from the blood of the grape. What happened? Israel waxed fat and kicked. Israel forsook God and turned her back on the source of salvation. Israel married strange wives, worshipped heathen gods, and forgot the commandments of the Lord. What was the result? Israel was scattered abroad and spent a millennium trying to find her meaning and restore her identity. As an old Italian proverb once said, "In times of prosperity, no altars smoke." Isn't that our problem today? We find ourselves at the altars and the fires have gone out. Even the fire in our national heart has grown dim. We bow to the gods of reason. We worship the gods of work. We are preoccupied with the gods of sex. We pursue the gods of violent entertainment and march toward destruction to the tunes of the gods of the flesh. Now here we are. We're facing adversity, and we're not quite sure how to handle it. The international control of wealth has shifted. Military superiority has changed hands. We're no longer sure we're the most powerful or greatest nation in the world. Suddenly, the giant is sick, and there is no quick cure. Well, we face some handicaps. So how do we handle adversity? We face it at every level, and it hits us, each one, in a different way. For instance, a baby is born, contracts poliomyelitis, and grows up a cripple. One day he realizes he can't run and play like the others. He can't compete on the same level, and he lives with a physical handicap. Here is a woman who looks inside herself and knows there's something desperately wrong. As a child, she was abused and neglected. Now she reaps the pain of ingrained habits and conditioned behavior patterns that cause fear, bitterness, hate, and anger. She battles a seething rage that shortchanges her relationships. She lives with an emotional handicap. Then what about the young man who had all his dreams ahead of him? He had made such plans. He was going to achieve such greatness. But every time he pressed on the accelerator, there just wasn't enough power. He never quite made it. One day in his 40s, he had to face the fact that he would never compose the music, never paint the pictures, never build the skyscraper, never own his business, and never be president of the company. He lives with an intellectual handicap. Well, it's true. Each one of us has experienced it. Some of us may be going through it right now. Something inside of us goes limp. Something inside of us dies. We feel caught and desperately need some handles. But how do we turn handicaps into handles? Where is the prescription? What is the formula? Well, the Apostle Paul learned how the hard way, and we hear him say in 2 Corinthians 4, verses 8 and 9, "We're handicapped on all sides, but we're never frustrated. We are puzzled, but never in despair. We are persecuted, but we never have to stand it alone. We may be knocked down, but we are never knocked out." Then we reply by saying it sounds too easy. Just saying it doesn't make it so. And it's true. Sometimes we want easy answers, quick solutions, and instantaneous changes without personal commitment, emotional growth, and responsible action. We get caught in the do-it-yourself quick syndrome, which brings to mind the classic story of the Catholic and Jewish couples who live side by side in a duplex. For the Catholics, every Friday was fish only. But for the Jews, it was barbecue steak in the backyard night. To eat fish to the aroma of barbecued steak Friday after Friday was more than the Catholic couple could bear. Finally, after much deliberation, the only solution seemed to be to convert the Jewish couple to Catholicism and thus have them join the fish on Friday ritual. After several weeks, their objective was reached. With joy, they watched the holy water sprinkled and heard the words of the officiant, "You were born a Hebrew, raised a Jew, but I baptize you a Catholic." What a victory! What a relief! No more smell of barbecued steak on Friday. The next Friday rolled around. To the Catholic couple's dismay, the same aroma of barbecued steak came drifting through the apartment from the backyard. Horrified, they ran out to see what could have brought about such backsliding. To their surprise, the Jewish husband was standing over his simmering steak on the outdoor grill, sprinkling it with barbecue sauce and saying in solemn tones, "You were born a calf, raised a cow, and I baptize you a fish." Well, obviously, it just doesn't work that way. But the question is, how? How do we turn our handicaps into handles? Well, we've talked about the handicaps, and what about the handles? Here's where the Bible makes its most important contribution. It never leaves us without methods and means. Thus we hear the same Apostle Paul say in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 and 17, "This is the reason why we never collapse. The outward man does indeed suffer wear and tear, but every day the inward man receives fresh strength." And these little troubles, which are really so transitory, are winning for us a permanent and glorious reward out of all proportion to our pain. Well, for starters, these scriptures give us three principles of living that will bring results. Principle number one, we turn our handicaps into handles when we research our resources. Paul saw some resources to keep us from collapsing, and he labeled them as eternal. Thus, we join him in saying with 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 4 and 5, "We want our transitory life to be absorbed into the life that is eternal. Now the power that has planned this experience for us is God. He has given us His Spirit as a guarantee of its truth. This makes us confident, whatever happens." Oh, I like that statement. This makes us confident, whatever happens. Will that really work? It worked for John Milton, and out of his blindness came Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. It worked for Ludwig van Beethoven, and out of his deafness came the Ninth Symphony. It worked for John Bunyan, and out of his imprisonment came Pilgrim's Progress. It worked for Helen Keller, and out of her deafness and blindness came an inner power that could exclaim, "Neither darkness nor silence can impede the progress of the human spirit." The point is that each one of these people turned their handicaps into handles. They researched their resources, turned what they had to use over to the power of God, and emerged with giant contributions to humanity as a whole. And the beauty of it is, we can do the same thing. For instance, a man sat in my office and in a matter-of-fact voice said, "I made three bad decisions last year and it cost me $10 million. In fact, this year has been the year of a new start because I've had to begin from scratch." Well, to hear such staggering losses talked about in such matter-of-fact terms boggled my mind, particularly when it is a major task for me to keep my checkbook balanced, let alone talk about losing $10 million. So I asked him, "How can you be so matter-of-fact? How can you be so calm about it all?" In answer, he said, "You should have seen me a month ago. I was in a deep depression and on the verge of suicide. I'd built an empire, and in 1 year it crashed to the ground all around my head. Finally, in desperation, I cried out to God just to take my life and save my family further embarrassment by the stigma of my suicide." Then he said, "Do you know what God put in my heart? Why are you so upset? You still have everything that counts. Why don't you count your blessings? Turn them over to me and I will show you a better life." That was the turning point. I did just that. I still had my family, my health, a heavily mortgaged house, and the prospect of a job. Most important of all, I still had my faith. So I went out and went after it. I still have some downers, but in the process, I am discovering new resources of faith. I'm living a much happier, though less grandiose, lifestyle than I've ever known. For me, it is a matter of researching my resources and letting God help me put them to work. Paul said this is the reason why we never collapse. We have eternal resources. Principle 2. We turn our handicaps into handles when we retune our responses to life. Paul puts this concept in perspective by saying in 2 Corinthians 4:16, "The outward man does indeed suffer wear and tear, but every day the inward man receives fresh strength." The truth is that we are constantly having to tune and retune the way we react to life. On the one hand, we can live extrinsically and be pushed around from the outside by all our daily troubles, or on the other hand, we can opt to live intrinsically and govern our lives from the inside with a constant retuning to the power of God within us. Demas lived from the outside. He apparently left the faith because he loved the world, according to 2 Timothy 4:10. Paul lived from the inside, and according to Philippians 4:11, learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. Demas evidently structured his life by temporary values, while Paul structured his life by eternal values which transcend the daily pressures. For this reason, he could say in 2 Corinthians 4:17, "These little troubles, which are really so transitory, are winning for us a permanent and glorious reward out of all proportion to our pain." The point is that we have the capacities to become bigger than our situations. We're not made out of wood, hay, and stubble that burns. We're not made out of metal that can be melted away. We are made out of eternal stuff. We are very valuable in God's sight. We are made to last forever. It's all a matter of tuning. George Matheson, the great hymn writer, found this out. As a young man, he lost his eyesight in an accident. However, on the spot, he made a decision to retune his responses to life. Matheson made himself the vow, "I will reach every goal I have set, blindness or not." A look at his life bears it out. He retuned and became bigger than life. Now every Lord's Day, somewhere people worship and sing the hymn of his heart. "O love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean depths its flow may richer, fuller be." But there's a third principle, principle 3. We turn our handicaps into handles when we reorder our priorities. In this regard, Paul tells us that we have to look at all the time, not at the visible things, but at the invisible. The visible things are transitory. It is the invisible things that are really permanent. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 18. But Christ also saw the importance of this principle and made the statement that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also, in Matthew 6:21. What all this really means is that handles are a matter of priorities. We have the option of living by the secular priorities that place importance on the visible things, or The spiritual priorities that emphasize the invisible things. On the secular side, we are caught up in the me syndrome, which we have moved to a compulsive taking care of ourselves. It's as though we are yet in a revival of narcissism, which we want to live for the big I. Consequently, we have fathers who don't want a father, mothers who don't want a mother, children who don't want responsibilities, and a lifestyle that is void of joy, hope, meaning, and faith. Like narcissists, we sit and look at our distorted images in the pool. In the name of humanism, we've made God the symbol of our own powers and divine faith in the terms of the certainty of our own convictions based on our own experiences of thought and feeling. On the spiritual side, there's another option, making the invisible things really permanent. To do this, we set up our lifestyles by faith in God and view life from a transcendental self in the process of developing in the image of Christ. In this model, 2 Corinthians 3:18 tells us, all of us who are Christians have no veils on our faces, but reflect like mirrors the glory of the Lord. We are transfigured by the Spirit of the Lord in ever-increasing splendor in His own image. This means that when the chips are down and the handicaps of us trapped, we have a resource of spiritual strength. We have the power, according to 2 Corinthians 5:7, to live by trusting Him without seeing Him. To use the words of Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 8 and 9, we are so sure of this that we would really rather be away from the body and be at home with the Lord. It is our aim, therefore, to please Him. This kind of spirit is the strength of our faith, and it is fully reflected in the testimony of an early church Christian martyr who turned his handicaps into handles through the power of spiritual priorities. Here is what he writes from a deep, dark dungeon. In a dark hole, I have found cheerfulness. In a place of bitterness and death, I have found rest. While others weep, I have found laughter. Where others fear, I have found strength. Who would believe that in a state of misery I have had great pleasure, that in a lonely corner I have glorious company, and in the hardest bonds, perfect repose? All these things Jesus has granted me. He is with me, comforts me, and fills me with joy. He drives bitterness from me and fills me with strength and consolation. This is the reason why we never collapse. In Christ, we have the power to move from handicaps to handles.